Welcome, everybody, to the second edition of U Sports. Your co-host, Jacob Berry, here.
And Pat McNamara.
And we got Tom Simonisen on again. Tom, welcome back.
Thanks for having me back, guys.
P-Mac, you want to give the update for SLU Sports?
Yep, big weekend SLU Sports this past week. Billiken Baseball lost, first time they were shut out all year, lost 12-0 on Sunday to UMass. They lost the series 2-1. They've got an 8-7 conference record still, though, in the A-10. And the women's club softball took fourth in nationals, so good news for them. And then on the track team, Brittany Cloudy and Kitta Alvers qualified for the NCAA West preliminaries.
All right. Thank you, Patrick. Next, we got NBA talk. It's getting close to playoff time, but first off, we'll have a little discussion about Ron Artest, a.k.a. Meta World Peace. Tom, what do you think about Mr. World Peace's elbow that he threw the other night?
Oh, I think it's bull crap that they only gave him a 7-game suspension because if you recall, back in 2006, Carmelo Anthony punched Marty Collins in the face, and he was given a 15-game suspension. And if you watch the footage from that, it's I don't think it's nearly as bad as Artest's flagrant elbow to Harden's face. So I think they definitely should extend his suspension to more than 7 games.
Yeah, also with his history, I think going into the stands as well as a couple other incidents that have taken place pretty much each year that he's been in the league, he definitely should be punished a little harsher than that, P-Mac.
I don't think he should be suspended at all.
What's your reasoning with that?
I'm kidding, of course. Yes, more than seven. The worst part about it is not, well, I mean, obviously the elbow, but he tried to claim afterward that he was celebrating. He felt Harden first, like he nudged into him, and then he cocked his elbow back and jacked him. So, and if he said, I'm sorry, it was in the heat of the moment, then 10 games, but or 7 or whatever. But he won't even admit what he did. He's trying to deny it. So that makes it even worse. And he's making it up when he said that he claims it was an accident. Obviously wasn't, because right after it happened, he kept running up the court as if he was like running away from the incident. If he actually did it on accident, which he obviously didn't, he would have immediately turned around and been like, oh my gosh, I'm sorry, whatever. But he kept running away as if he was trying to get away and hide the incident from the refs. So obviously he doesn't know what he's talking about. Yeah, I'd say
You think it's 10, harsh enough to
15 games even. I would say I would not have a problem at all with him being done for the whole playoffs.
Whole playoffs? I think that could be,
I don't know that
be,
I'd go that far, but maybe.
I'd say as far as maybe benching him maybe for the quarters. Not quite the semis. The NBA, so I guess it'd be the Western semis, but other than that, I think that's pretty fair.
So the first two rounds?
Yeah, first two rounds of the NBA playoffs. I think that's pretty fair. Especially considering, like, Harden didn't instigate it at all, you know?
There was some talk that maybe he was getting in his way to try and run up into him and stop his celebration, but he didn't even say anything, so I don't think he instigated it.
Oh, yeah, if you watch the end of that footage after Artest, you know, elbows him in the face. As he's running up the court, Ibaka runs at him, and he, like, stops, and, like, Artest, like, posts up, you know, like, all right, like, ready to throw down.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And I think if you – that's why I think it's totally
– You got in a boxing stance.
Exactly. I think that the people who claim that it was an accidental elbow, if you watch that footage, I mean, if you accidentally elbowed someone in the face
– You wouldn't get all defensive
when someone runs at you. So I think – by him doing that, he's essentially admitting that he did it on purpose.
Also, going back to that Artest Ibaka, who do you guys think would win that battle?
In a fight?
Yeah, a fight. We got Ron Artest, 6'7", 260, going up against Serge Ibaka out of the Republic of Congo, 6'10", 235.
Artest is crazier, though.
Yeah, I would have to agree. I mean,
and I'm referring to him as Artest. I think he's lost the right to have a nickname involving the word peace.
I'll agree with that. I don't know why I called him that in the first place, but definitely agree with that. So moving on, playoff time.
Real quickly before we get on to the playoffs. Yeah.
What do you have to say, Patrick?
I have a quick thing that I was made aware of the other day involving the clutchness of Kobe Bryant. Tom actually informed me of a study that was done because if you ask people around the country, I bet you at least 3/4 of people would claim Kobe's the most clutch person in the NBA. Tom showed me this study that was done. Last 24 seconds of the game when your team's down 1 or 2 points, and Kobe Bryant was shooting 31%, which is, that's atrocious. That's probably about 10% below what he shot for his career. Actually, probably a little more than that. And Carmelo Anthony is actually shooting nearly 50%. I'd take Durant, Wade, Carmelo, even Chris Paul, maybe.
Would you go so far as to say LeBron?
Actually, the study didn't.
In terms of the study, I think LeBron was shooting a better percent, but LeBron doesn't have the right mentality. He's afraid to take those shots for whatever reason, who knows. But Kobe, everyone's like, yeah, he's made the most, but he's also missed by far the most. He has less than a third chance of making it, according to the study, when he takes those shots. And he's got guys wide open there. I saw the video from this. He's taking double-teamed turnaround fadeaways and airballing and stuff. So, so that's a quick point before we get to the playoffs. Tom, comments?
Back to what you were saying. The study actually didn't have Durant, LeBron, or Wade on there, but I would assume they would all probably be higher than Kobe's, especially someone like Durant. He would have to be up there with Chris Paul. And actually, Melo was one. I think he was shooting 21 of 44. Chris Paul was at 2, shooting around, I think, 45%. Don't quote me on this because I might be a little off. And then actually, Sean Marion was number 3, shooting about the same as Chris Paul. Yeah,
with that quick shot.
Exactly. Like, I think I'll
getting it off before the defender gets there.
I think I'll take Kobe over Sean Marion.
The numbers.
What? Sean Marion, the greatest clutch player in history.
But no, actually, to your point about people thinking Kobe's the most clutch player. Actually, that's the only reason the Knicks were able to beat the Bulls last week is because they, in the last remaining seconds, I think in the fourth quarter to force an overtime, they gave the ball to Melo and he shot a 3. And then again in overtime, he shot a 3 to win it. So
yeah, Team USA this summer with the London 2012 Olympics coming up in August. This is a completely hypothetical question because it would never happen. But if somebody somehow in a dream were able to take the U.S. down to the final, Team USA down to the wire, let's hope Coach K gives it to Carmelo or Wade, not Kobe. But obviously,
I don't know. I'd like to see a alley-oop over the shorter players, less athletic players around the world. I think that'd be a pretty nice end to a game.
Yeah, but let's move on to the playoffs here.
Well, you think that poor shooting late in games will hurt the Lakers?
Absolutely. And now, especially going on the playoffs, they're not going to have Artest, and they're going to have to play Denver in that first round. So I've actually got Denver winning that series in 5 or 6.
Any key matchup to watch?
Yes. Celtics. I definitely can see Boston totally
beating Chicago.
Yeah, I can definitely
in the second round?
Yeah. I have no problem with them beating Atlanta, but I mean the other night they played Miami, and I know LeBron, Wade, and Bosh didn't play, but they held them to 66 points. So, I mean those guys, they may be old, but they can still play, and I can totally see them giving Chicago a run for their money and having that be the biggest upset of the series.
Unless, of course, Memphis were to maybe beat the Lakers.
God.
Possibly that older San Antonio team in. Okay, Memphis beat the Clippers. Thanks for the correction.
And then the Spurs after that.
And then the Spurs after
I
that.
I would completely.
Can you see that happening?
No, I can't see San Antonio losing to Memphis again after what happened last year.
There's a lot
okay, well, I don't think that's going to happen again this year. I don't think they would let that happen. I have too much faith in the Spurs. But we'll have to see. But I can definitely see if it came down to it in the finals, actually, if it was between San Antonio and Miami, I would definitely have to pick San Antonio easily. All right. I knew this was going to cause some controversy. That's why I had to look some stuff up. And I'm not going to bore everyone with numbers. But I think the Spurs can match up really well, primarily because the Heat have no inside presence. Duncan will shut them down.
That is true.
Duncan will shut them down just like Chandler did last year with the Mavs, which will force Miami into a jump shooting game.
Jumping LeBron can dunk over Duncan?
if you force Miami into a jump shooting game, there's no way the Heat are going to be able to stack up against San Antonio, bar none. And San Antonio can take five really good guys off the bench who can score and create their own shot. You can't really say the same for the Heat. And once again, Miami really only has three capable defenders with LeBron, Battier, and Wade. So, PMAC, what do you think? I know you're going to completely disagree with me because you hate the Spurs.
I think I also don't like Miami either, for the record. But
that's not true.
But I don't. But in the one meeting they had this year, the Heat ran them off the court 120-98. But also, the Spurs are not going to be able to run with the Heat seven times, the much younger and way more athletic Heat. So I'll take Miami, but that's assuming the Spurs even find a way to get past the Thunder, who are also much more athletic.
Perfect. You fell right into my trap because I was actually hoping you would say that they would have a problem with Oklahoma because I actually looked something up right before I came, because I don't
fell into my trap.
I don't think OKC is the matchup the Spurs have to worry about. The Spurs' weakness is obviously their interior defense and rebounding over really big guys. And again, OKC doesn't, I don't think, have as strong as an inside presence. I think the Lakers, on the other hand, depending on what happens with our test, are exactly what the Spurs need to worry about. The Spurs destroyed the Lakers the last two times they met, but again, I don't hold much weight in regular season games.
But how can you see the Lakers getting past OKC? Who's going to guard Durant? With our test out,
that's Matt the thing. They can put Barnes on him.
I don't think that would fare very well.
But yeah, like I said, without our test though, it's completely up in the air.
It's a good thing our test really cares about the health of his team.
Exactly. I actually
tweeted. Really team player.
When that happened, I actually made a pretty funny tweet about that, about our test being probably one of the selfish players in the league.
I'd agree with that.
But, no, back to what you're saying about, back to my other point about Thunder and Spurs. The way they're playing right now, especially without Harden, I think it's almost guaranteed that the Spurs are going to make it to the finals. I don't know. Like I said, they can, like, off the bench, they can get Green, Leonard, Blair, Splitter, and Bonner, who have been looking like absolute pros this season. So I have all the faith in the world that San Antonio can hopefully win another championship.
Skip Bayless is obsessed with Tiago Splitter as well. So you and him have something in common there.
Awesome. Great.
You think Blair can get it done without both of his ACLs in his knees?
I don't know. We'll have to see. But no, I think
he could come back to haunt
him. Yeah,
maybe.
I think he can.
We'll see if Utah targets his knees in round one.
Yeah.
Any other thoughts on NBA playoffs, boys?
Another team I can see going really far is Indiana. They're kind of one of those sleeper teams that no one pays attention to throughout the regular season. But they're going in as a three seed. I think they're going to fare pretty well. They have to play Orlando and the Magic without Dwight. They're going to steamroll them. easily. And then, yeah, I can definitely see an upset with the Pacers. So, yeah, the two teams out east I would say you definitely got to watch for are the Celtics and the Pacers.
All right. Thanks for the insight, Tom. Moving on to NFL. Thursday is the NFL draft. Tom, you heading out real quick? You heading out? All right. Yeah. Say goodbye to the audience, please.
All right. Well, guys, thanks for having me on again. It was always it's always fun to argue with PMAC because he's delusional. But all right, I just can't wait for Saturday when the Spurs steamroll the Jazz. So.
Yeah, Tom, maybe you can come on next week, see if your priorities are in line.
You
yeah,
might not want to come on based on how that
yeah, actually,
is going.
It's that's totally conditional on how well San Antonio does. But all right, guys, well, thanks
right,
for having me
see
on
you.
Again.
Thanks, Tom. See you. All right, Patrick, NFL draft.
Yep.
You want to, you got any quick thoughts before we get into some team needs about
the... Yeah, we'll get into the team needs in a sec, but... this might not be covered in that, so I'll point this out real quick. That Ryan Tannehill is the most overrated player in, at least out of the first round projected players. He is ranked as a third quarterback, and I don't have a problem with that because after the first two, there's not that many great quarterbacks coming out, really. But there was... Todd McShay over on ESPN was actually talking about him maybe going up to the third overall pick. Probably not, but possible.
You think, wait, Vikings? Or
well,
you think
no, that, trade that someone would trade
okay.
with the Vikings to try and nab him, which I think is absurd. This guy, and A&M did way less or way worse than expected last year, but it was a lot because of their defense, so I won't fault him there. But Tannehill put up average numbers. I mean, they weren't bad, but they weren't great at all. 61% last year completion rate, 29 TDs to 15 picks, so nothing great there. I mean, Luck and Whedon and Russell Wilson. Russell Wilson was 33-4 compared to Tannehill's 29-15, and I think he actually could end up being a better NFL QB than Tannehill. An underrated sort of dark horse player. And then Luck, Whedon, and a number of other players, Kellen Moore and some other guys, put up much better completion rates. And some of those guys, 10% better than him, and much better TD to pick ratios. So, I mean, I don't see where all the hype is coming. He's 6'4", so that's half the reason everyone's obsessed, but... I think it's ridiculous to talk about him going possibly third. I don't even think he should go top 10.
Yeah, I think a lot of the where the hype is coming from is his potential. He's an athletic quarterback, which I think is where the league is kind of going a little bit more towards accepting those athletic quarterbacks. Like Cam Newton had a great year last year. Tim Tebow is the exception, though. I wouldn't consider him athletic. But so Tannehill does have some escapability, and also those numbers definitely are not worthy of a top 10 pick, but you have to think that was, I think it was his first full season as a starter after converting from...
He came in for Gerard Johnson partway through the season, the previous one.
So, but
First full.
So first full season as a starter... He showed signs of not greatness, but signs of that he could play in the next level. Again, you brought up a couple of stats which are pretty eye-popping that a lot of the experts won't tell you. They'll just say his talent and potential. That being said, he has all the potential in the world. I could see him starting down the road, but you don't spend a top 10 pick on
unproven.
On unproven, who if I can kind of see the Dolphins taking him, I can kind
of
understand that
some of the mock drafts
because they don't really have any other options. But he's not a day one starter, in my opinion.
I don't think so at all.
So, and you don't spend a top 10 pick on a quarterback for 4 years down the road.
I actually did learn something interesting just now. It says that in 08, he had 844 receiving yards, 6'4", 222, a big receiver, and he was very good his freshman year, actually. And I knew he played receiver. I didn't know he had over 800. And then 600 in 09, his sophomore year. So that's pretty impressive. But that's so, not what he's going to be doing in the NFL.
Yeah, unless he... After people realize how he can't play quarterback, he turns into a Tebow, maybe possibly tight end or wildcat situation. And again, why would you waste a top 10 pick, even as high as three, as some people are claiming, mm-hmm. on a wildcat quarterback? I don't see that at all. And I certainly hope the Chiefs, there's speculation the Chiefs should get him. Screw that. No way. I don't want him. Boo him louder than I boo Castle.
All right.
Along with the Chiefs, what do you think? Who do you think we should draft first round?
Well, for first round, I'd be okay with them going with the Memphis D tackle, who a lot of people are talking about them getting, Dontari Poe. He's supposed to have a really good potential. Maybe risky is what I heard, but
yeah,
I'd be fine with that. I mean, they don't have any weaknesses besides quarterback and apparently D-tackle. So, I mean, that's fine with me. I have no problem with that. I wouldn't mind them trading down either and trying to nab a couple second-round picks maybe, since there's no clear-cut player you would take. I actually just saw... a mock draft online, so I wouldn't put too much stock into that. But it talked about the Chiefs considering Mark Barron, the very, very talented safety out of Alabama, great run stopper, hard hitter. So if you had him and Eric Berry, all SEC safeties there, Eric Berry and Mark Barron, I don't think many receivers would want to run anywhere close to either of those guys. That would be very scary to see. Deep over the middle, but I don't think they'll do that, but that would be very interesting. I think he might get picked before then, but
they play the same position, those two safeties.
Yeah, and I was thinking about that, but they would move Barry to free safety is what the consensus here on that pick is what I
Barry isn't here. Free safety is somebody who floats in the middle, you know, trying to get interceptions. You saw him making plays all over the field. That's why he was a Pro Bowl. Barry, Pro Bowl strong safety. What's the point of moving him to free safety?
Yeah, I mean, he is good ball hawker too, though, with picks and all that stuff.
He did do that late in the season, I admit that. But, again, don't utilize his full skill set.
Mm-hmm. But I mean, I'm not saying I think that's definitely something they should do, but it would be pretty cool to see. But I'd be fine with them taking the D tackle out of Memphis, or I wouldn't mind at all trading down since there's no obvious pick here. But something I do think they should do, though, is pick up a QB in a later round. Russell Wilson out of Wisconsin is only 5'11", so no one talks about him. But he threw 33 TDs to 4 picks. One of the best ratios you'll ever see, TD to pick, 72% completion. That's unreal too. And that was in a pro style run first offense at Wisconsin. And then before he was at Wisconsin, he did it in a pass first offense at NC State and put up ACC passing records. So he's proven he can play two completely different styles and be very good in both. And I mean, yeah, I know he's small, but if you could take him in the third round, I mean, it's not like you have too many options there, and you can because Castle's not the answer. So I'm not saying he's for sure going to be good, but I think it'd be a risk worth taking in a mid round when you're not necessarily drafting stars then anyway.
I disagree with a lot of those points. The D tackle, Dontari Poe, along with Tannehill, very unproven. He showed up great in the draft or the combine, ran sub like a 4.9 at 350 pounds. That's That's, again, he's athletic, but he shows bursts of speed and skill. But if you look at his numbers, I think the past two seasons, they compared him to Haloti Ngata, the D-tackle out of Oregon a couple years ago. He's played for the Ravens.
Mm-hmm.
They had similar combine numbers, but the last two seasons that Ngata had at Oregon, I think it was something like over 100 tackle, like 115 or 120 tackles that those last two seasons. Poe had 70. And if you're playing in a Memphis defense and you get 70 tackles and the rest of you, what's the rest of your team doing? You know, they, you can't think Memphis has a bunch of playmakers, whereas Alabama, you could say, like Dante Hightower didn't have stellar numbers, but that's because he had a whole team of NFL starting defensemen. Who does Memphis have to take those tackles
absolutely
away from Poe?
Absolutely no one. They won two games last year.
All right, yeah. So that's one reason why I'm hesitant on Poe. I think we need a D tackle.
He could be risky, and I think they should consider trading down because, like I said, there's no clear cut player. I wouldn't.
Do you
be
think
opposed
if
to
DeCastro,
him, but...
the guard out of Stanford, were available at 11, do you think we should take him or trade down? Do you think a guard is a pressing need?
I don't think it's a very strong need, but I would take him, though, because I think he's going to have a very good NFL future. Big Stanford O-lineman. They had a great running game when he was there. I think it'd be worth taking because I think he'd be, at that point, definitely the best player available. Probably.
I say we jump all over him if he's at 11. I told you some of these stats, but last year the Chiefs, these numbers are partly low because Jamal Charles was gone all of last year. But I think to the left, they were running 20th best in the league. Up the middle, 31st best in the league. And to the right, dead last in the league running-wise. And if we get a guard, we already got the right tackle sealed with the signing out of Houston. But if we get a guard, or even I'd even be fine with a tackle, get somebody left tackle for the future, move Albert to guard. I mean, I'd be totally fine with that. I just think,
yeah.
I mean, I don't. We need somebody with that 11. There's got to be somebody we can take. I also hope, as far as D tackles go, I'd much rather get a player like Fletcher Cox out of Mississippi State, if he's still on the board. There's talks of him going in the top 10, but if he's on the board, I'd say take him as well.
Or they could go Michael Brockers out of LSU and have an all-LSU defensive front for the 3-4, Glenn Dorsey, Tyson Jackson, and Brockers.
I won't go too much into that, but we've already spent two top 5 picks on those, and they haven't panned out well at all.
That's true.
But if we're talking Rams, we know all those – St. Louis fans love their Rams. Who do you think the Rams should take with that first pick?
The Rams with their first round pick?
Yeah.
Well, right now they're sitting at 6, and obviously it depends on what happens with the 4 and 5. It's obvious the top two are going to be Luck then Griffin, and it looks like more than likely Vikings, Matt Khalil, O-lineman out of USC. So...
there's also talk of them taking Claiborne, possibly.
Yeah, I did hear that on one mock draft, but for the most part, it looks like they'll probably take Khalil, in which case you'd have Browns 4, Bucks 5. Then you'd have Browns most likely taking Trent Richardson and Bucks Claiborne, which would leave Blackmon. And I would definitely go Blackmon if he was available, so that Bradford actually has somebody to throw to. But it all depends on what happens there because, I mean, if the Browns decided to take Blackmon and then the Bucks went with Richardson, then Rams Claiborne. So basically, Blackmon, Richardson, and Claiborne.
Yeah.
Whoever's available of those three, you take him.
I actually think the Rams are one of the best... are in one of the best spots for this draft.
Yeah. They don't even have to make a decision.
Yeah, everybody says there's 6 elite players. They're number 6, whichever one falls to them.
Mm-hmm.
They have, when they traded down from number two, they just got a bunch of picks. I think most of them are future drafts, but that sets them up for the future. And also, one of their other pressing needs, other than I think they need a receiver to help Bradford out, so hopefully they can get Blackman. And if he's not there, again, take one of those six. I wouldn't mind them trading down a few picks to get, you know, one of the other receivers that could possibly be taken first round.
Yeah, something I think for if the Rams don't get Blackman, something that them and I think a lot of teams need to look at if this guy's available second round, because it's kind of widely been assumed that Alshon Jeffrey out of South Carolina will fall to the second round, which I think is ridiculous. I said last week that I think he's probably the most undervalued player in the whole draft. They have him going second round. Most people do. He's like 6'4", 220 something. He's huge. He's also fairly fast for his size. He makes amazing one-handed catches and stuff. Catches it over basically anyone. If you just lob it up to him, he put up 1,500 yards 2 years ago, one of the top stats in the entire country. Last year, put up 700, which is still fairly good, but a massive drop off from that 1,500 because he had an awful QB situation that South Carolina was dealing with last year, which I don't think you can blame him for. And it's not like 700 is bad. So, I mean, I personally think he is worth
second round
pick.
Sound.
Yeah, oh, definitely. But I think this might sound a little bold at first, but I think he's worth a top 15 or 20 pick in the entire draft. I think he's I think he's got a chance to have the best NFL career of any of these receivers. I think Floyd will have the best, but I think Jeffrey and Blackman
will be up there.
Right there for second best career. I mean, I think he's way undervalued. So Rams or anybody else who can nab him later than their initial pick, I would definitely do that.
Yeah, another one of their needs, I think, is along the D-line. There's a couple options for as far as D-tackles go as well as D-ends. I think they have two second-round picks, actually, number 39 overall and number 33, the first pick in the second draft. So they could address, I'd say, D-tackle with one of those and then possibly getting Jeffrey with the other pick. But, again, the Rams are sitting pretty in this draft. I think they could really be the big winners out of this 2012 draft.
Yeah, I think they also need to
address... As much as I don't want to admit it.
Yeah, I think they need to address their offensive line as well. This past year, until one of their last games of the season, they had gone every single game with not having the same exact offensive line starting from the previous game. A new offensive line every game. Until late in the season. So if you can get an O-lineman, because Bradford last year, I mean, it was a
He was getting beaten up.
Yeah, I mean, he'd have 2 seconds and he'd be getting nailed and fumbling and stuff. So, I think they definitely need to address that.
Yeah, so... Another team we'll highlight is the Bears pretty quickly. Got a pretty big Chicago following here at SLU, so we'll hit that up. PMAC, you got any thoughts on that?
It's incredible, but they had a significant problem on defense with their pass defense. They could use a defensive, basically any sort of pass rusher to help that out. So... maybe, I mean, if there's an obvious pick there for a pass rusher, a D-end or something, take that. But if not, maybe go for that in the second round, because you also, even with Jay Cutler, who's had stints of great performance in his career, they finished 26th in passing this past year. And one of the reasons was because he didn't really have anybody to throw to. Johnny Knox is not a number one receiver.
Maybe not number two.
Yeah, maybe not even that. He was really inconsistent last year. Had a drop off in his performance, but that was one of the reasons. And then also, I mean, he has never had a good O-line since he's been in Chicago. So, if you can nab an offensive lineman there. I think
that position is long overdue for that organization.
Yeah, I think that's what I would take personally. I would definitely take an O-lineman if there's a pick there that they like. If not, if Stephen Hill out of Georgia Tech, or, I mean, they won't do this, but I would consider Jeffrey because they got Brandon Marshall, but if you can have him and Alshon Jeffrey, 2 6-4 receivers, that's going to be and Jay Cutler, when you give him the receivers, he can do incredibly well. So if you had that or Stephen Hill, the big receiver out of G-Tech, alongside Marshall with Cutler thrown in, thrown to him and Forte in the backfield, that'd be an incredibly hard offense to stop. So I'd look at that, but I think my top priority if I was picking for Chicago would definitely be offensive line so that Cutler actually has a few seconds to get the ball off to Marshall.
Yeah, another thing I think they should look at is the pass rush. They have Julius Peppers, who is playing well, but, I mean, he's getting doubled because they honestly don't have anybody else. Urlacher isn't really a pass rusher, so to speak. But and also, they just lost Amobi Okoye to free agency, former Louisville player, but if they could get D end, maybe D tackle, but possibly a linebacker even, just basically any pass rusher, I think they should definitely look long and hard at. One mock draft has Michael Brockers, D tackle out of LSU. As I was saying about the Chiefs, I mean, LSU, D tackle, beware, Chicago fans, but I'd try to get one of those SEC DNs, possibly Courtney Upshaw out of Bama.
He played linebacker there, but you could probably move
him. He's a pass rusher, though. He's a great pass rusher. Yeah. So, again, look in the SEC other than LSU front line. Also, this past week we had a Champions League. Got the final coming up next week. Bayern prevailed against Real in some stunning PKs. Also, Chelsea advances. So I know I'm happy that the Spaniards aren't represented in this final. P-Mac, you got any thoughts on that?
Everyone was talking about Barcelona Real final, and it's the exact opposite instead. It'll be a really, really interesting final, though. I mean, it's still two powerhouse teams. It's not some no-names or anything.
Yeah.
I watched the I watched a little bit of the first leg at Barcelona-Chelsea, but I watched probably almost the whole thing for the second leg just yesterday, and it was one of the most incredible defensive efforts I've ever seen. Barcelona, Chelsea won 1-0 at Chelsea in the first leg. And then in the second leg, Barcelona, going back home, looked in good position because they always put up 4 or 5 goals at home, it seems. And Chelsea comes in. Barcelona gets 2 goals. And I believe after the first one, John Terry cheap-shotted a Barcelona player, kneed him in the hamstring, just out of nowhere, deliberately need him.
Him out for the final?
Yeah, so he was red carded. He'll miss the final, which is huge. Leader and defender for Chelsea, captain, yeah. So he'll miss that. But so they were down to 10 men, and they were down 2-0. So in the aggregate goal, for anyone who doesn't follow soccer, they combined the goals from the two games. And if it's tied after that, has more away goals advances, and if that's even 2, they'll go to extra time and shootout. But anyway, so Barcelona up 2-0 in this game yesterday, so 2-1 overall, and Chelsea down a man. They looked finished, and then they got a goal out of nowhere, great goal. And then Barcelona after that, Messi missed a penalty off the crossbar that would have sealed it probably. Then he hit the post on another one. Then they actually scored in the 80-some minute. They actually scored, and were offsides, though. So Chelsea was just sitting in their own box the whole time. Great defending. So that was exciting. Then Bayern, obviously, today.
Yeah, that was a much different story. We had a lot of scoring in that game. It was a lot more exciting. I think there was 3 goals first half, much to the demise of Chelsea and Barcelona fans that just went in that shell the whole game. Much more exciting game, that Bayern game. But if we were to preview the finals, I think the easy pick is Bayern playing in Germany for the final. Also, Terry being gone. Bayern, at least in that Real game, they showed a lot of offensive firepower. If Terry isn't there to kind of solidify things in the back four, I think that could give Chelsea huge problems.
Yeah, it'll be an exciting game. First time in 50 years that one of the it's either the first time that one of the finalists or that it could be the first time that the home team has won it. But Bayern playing in Munich, so that's the first time in 50 years. So that'll it's not like they won't have a lot of Chelsea fans there, but there's something special about playing at home like that. So I think it'll be a very good game. But I think it'll be probably a higher scoring game than people might expect. Both those teams play a pretty solid D. But with Terry out, Bayern's going to go at it. So if they're going at it, they'll probably give up a little more too. So I don't know who I would take, but if I had to guess, I'd probably go Bayern just because I think that home advantage, I think that'll be pretty big.
Yeah, just to speak to the Bayern fans across the world, I know here at SLU, I saw 3 different people with Bayern jerseys today. Can't imagine what they're going to be like in Germany for the final. But I think Bayern's taking that one. Hopefully, I'm a German soccer fan, so hopefully Bayern can take it home. And that's all we have this week. Thank you, U Sports fans. Jacob Berry here.
And Pat McNamara.
So catch us next time. See you, fellas.